You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Brocast. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network, and I am joined by Tracy Pearson. Tracy, how the heck are you?
I love it when you say my name like it's the first time you've ever pronounced it. Tracy Pearson.
Yes.
I'm okay, Dave. I'm going to be honest.
The Swedish Persson, like Persson.
Persson, Persson. Yeah. You got to get the little Swedish sing-songy. It was Persson. So Pers, son of Pers.
You know, I have a great grandfather who was an Algert Engdahl, which I defy you to come up with a more Swedish name.
Oh, you can walk through any cemetery in Sweden and.
I think there was a Lars
Nielsen, Carl Carlson. I mean, it's pretty
awesome.
Amazing.
It's awesome. What was going on when they came up with Algert? Not Albert. Algert.
Algert. That's not, I mean.
It's not a pretty name.
That's kind of it's not pretty, but maybe it is. Well, it's Algert. You got to say Algert.
You've really got it. How close are you to your Swedish?
My dad was from Sweden. He spoke Swedish.
Yeah. So
my grandmother's name was Bertha. Right, that sounds horrible.
That's
in Sweden, it was Berta. I mean, that's beautiful. So
yeah, it's better.
You just need the sing-songy Swedish kind of spin on it.
Berta. Yeah, us ugly Americans, we make it sound horrible.
Bertha. Yeah.
I'll get it. Yeah. No. You've got a good point.
Thank you.
We got to talk about UCLA sports, though, not Swedish ancestry.
One of these days, we are going to do a podcast on everything other than UCLA sports. And we'll see how many people actually listen to it. It's going to be like 32.
For our own sanity, that day is coming very, very soon.
Swedish people who have earwax. That's what.
Yes. Yes.
Which is there?
If we were in Sweden, we wouldn't have been able to pay attention to, blessedly wouldn't have been able to pay attention to UCLA losing last night. Losing doesn't really cover it, but losing last night to Arizona at home, 88-65. I didn't have the heart to look it up. It's got to be one of the worst home losses ever to Arizona. Probably one of the worst home losses ever. Lost by 23 points. Non-competitive for definitely the entire second half, but I would say from about the 10-minute mark in the first half on, sort of just deflated like a balloon. Just robbed of confidence, robbed of any will to play or win or compete. You know, there were some exceptions. Adembona, Dylan Andrews were at least out there competing, but a pretty, pretty disappointing showing from UCLA.
Yeah, it truly was. And I know you, we were texting during the game and you were telling me, wow, just giving up, lack of effort. And there is that element. They're shot. But it wasn't that to me. What really stood out to me, and I don't think we've talked about it that much, just the lack of athleticism on defense. And Cronin actually cited it in the post-game interview. Inability to stay in front of a man. And I know he was implying effort, but it was also the athletic ability to be able to stay in front of your man. It's not great team wise. It's just not. And, they've played good defense most of the season. You'd say that is what, you know, carried them through, most of the moments that were, you would say were successful. when they've not done well, I mean, the offense has been not good all year. So you can just assume that. When they haven't done well is because they played bad defense. And a lot of it, there was, you know, sometimes it was effort, focus. I mean, there were some recent games that were definitely effort and focus. But I think we need to discuss, like, because what we're going to be talking about here, I mean, the season's coming to an end, Dave. I mean, they're not going to win the Pac-12. Almost assuredly, they are not going to win the Pac-12 championship. So we have to start thinking a little bit about next year. We've been talking about it and writing about it a lot. So that's one thing to think about.
I want to go pretty esoteric there, and I think it's going to be frustrating for some people. But yes, I think you're right in a sense. I think this team we mentioned this throughout the season. The level of competitiveness from this team needs to be at this like super high level for them to be good. Like they need to play at maximum effort, maximum focus at all times to make up for both experience deficiencies and that overall functional athleticism deficiencies. Basically, this defense can work when Adem Bona is out there and they're screening and he can do the hard hedging. But if he's not in there, suddenly they have, except for Dylan Andrews, they have no plus athletes at any other spot on the floor. And it all gets really rough really quickly if they are not all locked in. And the thing with the guys he mentioned last night, Brandon Williams, Sebastian Mack, Will McClendon, Berke, none of them were locked in. Like Will McClendon obviously gives up a lot athletically, but there's stuff he can do positioning wise, focus wise, adhering to a game plan wise that he also wasn't doing in that game. Sebastian Mack obviously has the toe limitation, but he's not doing it either. And so yes, there's a talent deficiency. Yes, there's a talent deficiency such that they could play with that level of focus and maybe lose by 10 to Arizona instead of 23. But if they don't play with maximum effort and focus, they have no chance no matter what. And what we saw last night, to me, was a combination. It was they didn't play with effort and focus. And on top of that, they're at a pretty significant talent discrepancy to Arizona. But let's remember, a month ago, they played that team in McHale and were an unfortunate whistle away from winning that game. And it's just something shifted in this team in the last 3 weeks, and it wasn't they just suddenly got bad. It's something with their level of focus, and whether that's the kind of classic a lot of guys hit a freshman wall, or it's something more just, you know, these guys kind of are like, I'm done with this season. But one of the there's something mental that happened with this team beyond the like just assessment of the talent of these guys.
Sure. They're 14 and 16. They're getting beaten down. The season's coming to an end. So yeah, mentally focus effort. What I'm taking a little bit of the bigger picture what I was trying to establish is Cronin will get his teams to play good defense. This isn't a naturally great defensive team. Like you said, when Bonin is playing well, he's a good defender. When Dylan Andrews is a good defender, the rest of the team is kind of a big question mark. He has had them play good defense for the majority of the season. There has been moments and games when they haven't, but for overall, he's gotten an unathletic team to play pretty good defense. But you need a higher ceiling if you're going to win at a higher level. You just do. And the higher ceiling comes from not getting non-athletes to play to their potential. It's getting really good athletic defenders to play to their potential. I'm leading this into, because we're going to talk about the transfer portal here and there. And Cronin talked about two things basically last night, was UCLA's defense couldn't stay in front of anyone playing against Arizona, and firepower. I know all fans think, well, let's go out and get some guys who can really score and defend. There aren't guys in college that can really do that at a high level that you're just going to pick up in the transfer portal. If they're that good, they're going pro. There has to be something slightly wrong with their game is why they're transferring. And most of the time, I mean, you're not substituting one completely for the other, but one's going to be less than the other. So when you're going into the transfer portal, do you look for scoring firepower or do you look for defense? I'm of the predilection here that what got Cronin here is playing defense, and he should lean into going out and finding some world-class defenders, athletes that can really defend. If they've got a little bit of scoring, and find one good three-point shooter, but if you're going to go to the transfer portal, find some athletes who can defend. I'm a little afraid that's not going to happen because we saw it with Ben Halland, if you remember. He got away from what brung him, and yep. He wanted to improve his firepower, and that was probably the main thing that brought him down. He thought he could teach anyone how to play defense, no matter how unathletic they were. So it's going to be very interesting to see who they go after in the transfer portal, and that they're going to emphasize athletes who can defend or offensive firepower.
And this is kind of the thing I wanted to address a little esoterically, and it builds on that, which is, look, I know a lot of you listening would like John Wooden to resurrect himself and for Mick Cronin to suddenly be embodied by the spirit of John Wooden and for him to then have a fast break tempo offense plus a full court press, and you know, also for there to be no 3-point line and guys can't dunk anymore. I understand that. But that's not going to happen. We all need to recognize who Mick Cronin is and what his strengths are as a coach. And he also needs to recognize that. This is a huge inflection point. And I think there's a method to this offseason that I think people are advocating for, that UCLA goes out and gets 5 or 6 transfers and brings in basically a whole new team to come in along with Adembona and Dylan Andrews and maybe 1 or 2 others. And you know, in a certain world with a certain kind of coach, that might even make sense. But with Mick Cronin, there's a reality to how this team has to be put together and how it has to work for it to function for him. I think Tracy's right. Bring in a couple of really good athletes, and you know, the offense is going to figure itself out. If you are creating turnovers, if you are stopping guys on defense, you're going to generate more. And frankly, athleticism on the wing plays both ways. If you've got athleticism on defense, those guys, I'm just going to say it, might have a better chance of taking a guy off the dribble and creating their own shot too. Just rising and firing at the very least is going to be easier for them than it is for Will McClendon. So that's one. But then on top of that, it can't be 6 guys. It cannot be. Mick Cronin is a developmental head coach. I know we're all down on the talent right now, and this is why I was kind of pushing back on that part, because I don't want to get too far into this talent sucks. This team's no good, because the only way this is going to work is if a lot of these guys that are currently on the roster stick around and develop. The path forward for Mick Cronin, I've been banging this drum since January, and it feels all the more true now. The only path forward is retaining a good chunk of this roster and developing it for next year, because another rebuild, another restart, another attempt to start a new roster, we just saw what that looks like. And the best case scenario for this season is that they sustained the success from that 9-game stretch, but that success was leading into maybe an NCAA tournament bid. It takes a long time to learn to play from Mick Cronin. Some of these guys have learned and are starting to learn, and they need to be cultivated. They need to be developed. And I think any situation where you're going into this offseason with any expectation that need 5 new impact guys to take the place of the 5 guys who were impacting this year, that's not going to work out well. That's my fearless prediction.
I think you're exactly right. I've said it all season. Everyone, when they were struggling early and now struggling over 5 games, everyone cites the talent level, and that, I mean, it's not black and white. Of course, it's the talent level, and it would be great that Cronin could upgrade that through the transfer portal. But we've talked about it. It is not easy to play in Mick Cronin's program. He brought in 8 new players, 7 freshmen. It's just that's not viable in Mick Cronin's program. It's all about when you come in as a new player to Mick Cronin's program, you're overwhelmed, just not by the demands. I mean, so many things, how physical practices are, what he expects from you, how tough he can be on you. It is overwhelming. And you need that veteran leadership on the team to say, you know, hey, man, don't worry. You'll get through it. It pays off. He's going to get you there. They generally don't have that. So to make the same mistake. Now, granted, you bring in 6 transfers, it wouldn't be as bad as bringing in 7 freshmen. But there still is going to be culture shock. Let's put it that way.
Massive learning curve
of how to play at this level. Yep. So I that can't happen. And then also, I wanted to just add to what I was saying before. It's not only who they're targeting on who they would want, but the bigger question is who they can get.
Yes.
If you're a big time scoring wing, are you going to look at UCLA as the place that's going to showcase your scoring talent? I mean, how many points are they averaging a game? You know, how many shots are you going to get? How many possessions are you going to get? You're going to look at that. If you're an athlete and a defender and that's your calling card and you're saying, you know, the way I get to the NBA is to be Jalen Clark, this is the place for you to, a defender would look at this and go, okay, he's going to make me a kick-ass defender. This is the place to go.
Exactly. You have to know who you are and who you are in the marketplace, because Ben Howland, this was his problem, is he always thought, I'm an elite offensive coach. And so I don't think he ever understood how does that reconcile with anybody else besides me. And I think for Mick Cronin, look, you've had an efficient offense, but nobody would confuse you for an offensive head coach. It's whatever you think the truth of it is, your brand is defense and toughness. And so guys who are like that, and look, it's sort of the model that for many, many years, like the Steve Fisher and now Brian Dutcher, San Diego State teams had, which is we're going to recruit athletes and we're going to play great defense, and offense might happen sometimes and it might not. And I think UCLA, because of its status, can obviously do better than that. And if you can do better than San Diego State, then you're pretty much right where UCLA more or less should be. San Diego State's been a very good program for many, many years.
And you know what? Even stepping back and taking a bigger overview of UCLA, what is UCLA in college basketball, and what kind of players can you get there? And what is the ceiling with the kind of players you can get given the kind of coach you are and the kind of program you're running? It's a testament to UCLA that it was able to go to 4 Final Fours, 3 under Howland, 1 under Cronin, with that style where you pretty much minimize possessions. You play lockdown defense and you have a team full of kick-ass defenders. And that's the way you win. I mean, now that we're ending, you know, we can talk about this. Is that really the best way is that the way to optimize the UCLA basketball program's potential? Because I still believe that the type of player that's going to want to come to UCLA aren't those guys. They're the guys that want to get out and run, score. If you want to win at a high level, you need to be able to get top 15 to 25 talent and showcase that ability. And under Howland and Cronin, really developmental. Yeah, there's the Jaime Jaquez's in there, but there's a question of whether the UCLA program, to take it to the highest level where it's a top five program year in and year out, what kind of program does it need to be and what kind of players does it need to attract? Because they're different now than they were even 5 to 10 years ago. So yeah, Yeah, go ahead.
There's some realities that we basically baked into a lot of what we always trumpeted with UCLA basketball, which is UCLA largely wasn't cheating when a lot of major programs were. And so getting like the super, super elite talent, if they weren't connected to the West Coast, was more difficult than it was for other of the blue bloods or pseudo blue bloods. NIL changes things in a lot of ways because it's no longer cheating. But that's where it gets into a money argument, where it's, can UCLA consistently land top 10, top 15 talent? Like, my contention is always UCLA can build a very, very good program out of top 100 talent. I think Mick Cronin just did it for 4 years. And I think that's still like a very tried and true method for building a good program, as long as you have a good coach in place. So I don't, the problem,
but you have to know, like we said, you have to know who you are.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to recruit 5 Jalen Clarks, a couple of Jaime Jaquez's. I mean, that's what you, and then your challenge is to keep them in your program in the era of the transfer portal and NIL. And the way you do that is you, fundraise a lot of NIL and you keep them happy and you keep them there. But he's got to, right now, given where he is with this team this year, he's got to go into the transfer portal. I get it, but I don't think he can get away from still bringing in high school kids that he develops and he keeps. That play defense, that are the type of players that he has success with, rather than thinking, I'm going to go out and get some scorers. I mean, we've seen this movie.
Yeah. And this is the thing. And this is why, like, look, the one and dones that UCLA has gotten, Peyton Watson and Amari Bailey. I mean, not to go like completely revisionist, but never bring in a one and done. Like, unless you're going to be one of those programs that can recruit and be like at a top 15 level every single year with like who you're bringing in, never bring them in, because how different would this team be?
Dave, you're right. Yeah, but they can never do that.
But think about this.
Shiny object.
How different would this team be if instead of Peyton Watson, there was another Brandon Williams type who was brought in 2 years ago? How different would this team be if there was another Brandon Williams type brought in instead of Amari Bailey a year ago? And maybe the upside of last year's team wouldn't have been quite as high, but I still think it would have been damn, damn good.
No, you're right. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that's how
you build a sustainable, but this is sure. But back to the but back
coaches
to the point.
Don't think that way.
I get it, but coaches also don't think the way we're advocating right now, which is build a bunch of athletes and see if you can make it work. What I'm saying is, if you're talking about Mick Cronin understanding who he is, it's always more important to get developmental guys who can grow in the program than it is to get a flash in the pan guy who can, maybe be good by March and carry you an extra step in March. It's this team this year would have been a lot better with a sophomore and a junior who had taken the spots of Peyton Watson and Amari Bailey than it is. It would have avoided this pseudo cratering event that's happening this season if they had built with sustainability in mind. And this is, I'm really opposed to the short-term thinking at a lot of levels at UCLA and in sports. You have to, if you're thinking about your tenure and your legacy, you have to build with sustainability in mind. Winning in the NCAA tournament is a crapshoot. How you achieve a national title, if you are not John Wooden, is you give yourself as many chances at the as many bites at the apple as you can get with good enough teams. And what UCLA lost this year is a bite at the apple, because they're not going to make the NCAA tournament unless they go on an insane run next week. And that's the part that I think there's this idea that, oh, UCLA was really good last year, and if they hadn't had a couple of injuries, they would have won the national title. And it's like, no, they wouldn't have. They may have, But like they would have had going into the NCAA tournament, even as the like prohibitive favorite, which they weren't, but even if they had been, it's like a 15% chance they win that NCAA tournament. It's a crapshoot. You have to create opportunities to win. And that all comes from sustainability, 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 sustainability. And then you get the right collection of talent and you win. But it's this is the part where I think, again, understanding who he is and what kind of program he should be building is hugely important as we pivot into a little bit of an unknown going into next year.
Yeah, I mean, we're basically agreeing, but what I was saying was that to know, you were saying you kind of went contrary on me that you said, well, no coaches do that. Well, we've seen success when the coaches have realized what to do at UCLA, when they are Ben Howland and they are McConan. They've been to four Final Fours. When they know who they are, they're successful. Now, do I think if it was, you know, another coach who played a different style, could UCLA win at a higher level than that? Maybe, possibly, but there just aren't that many coaches like that out there. What I'm saying, the pitfall that they don't have to fall into is getting starry-eyed over the shiny object, like what you were saying. Those are the guys that a coach is successful with the philosophy that he's used to get to a point, and now he's at UCLA and he says, I need to get the top five, top 15 guy who to really take me to the next level. And like you said, that's counterproductive to the style and culture that got you there. So, and that's hard. It is hard when you're the UCLA coach and you're walking around recruiting events and you see a top 20 player who's scoring the hell out of it. And you've been a defensive coach for a long time and you say, that's the difference maker for me. I'm UCLA now. I should be able to get him. It is difficult to say, not going to go after that guy. He doesn't fit what we do. So it's a challenge. What I'd like to do is now get a little bit more specifically into the players. And I think we did this a little before. I'm going to have a story coming out today again about the timing of Odembona and his decision. UCLA will do what it can to keep Odembona. I don't think we're breaking news here to say he's going to test the NBA waters. The real challenge with what happens with Bona's fate here at UCLA is if he decides to participate in the NBA combine, which is in May 13th to the 19th. Transfer portal opens right after Selection Sunday. It goes through May 1st. Cronin already has an idea right now, but he'll define that idea of whether Bona is coming back or not. If Bona isn't coming back, Cronin needs to go into the transfer portal and find a starting post. He can't screw around until Bona plays in the NBA combine. And you'd have to think Bona, you know, they invite 70 guys. They're going to invite Odembona. So Odembona needs to make a decision. It's really Cronin's decision is based on what Odembona does. If he says, I'm going to go play in the NBA combine, you know, says, well, we'll miss you. You know, I mean, he has to do that. And then, if a Dem decides to go back to college, okay, he could come back to UCLA. Or, I mean, to be completely, you know, objective here, he'll go someplace else. I mean, that's the cold, hard fact of it. You'd love to have him back because he knows what it's like to play in Mick Cronin's program. But Cronin can't be held hostage, and I don't think in any way he is willing to be held hostage. So that's the situation with Odembona. A lot of moving parts. It's going to be very interesting to watch. We would think right after UCLA's season is over, he'll say he's going in the NBA draft. They get back an NBA evaluation, not the official committee evaluation, but you know, they can get some quick feedback through Cronin and through Bona's people. And you would hope he'd make a decision pretty quickly after that and not do this thing like, I'm going to go to the combine and play myself into the first round.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, keep in mind, and this is the most critical part of all this, it's mostly all about NIL. If UCLA can put a good package of NIL on the table in front of Bona, that would convince him to stay. That would be probably the most convincing element of his decision. If he can say, you know, I can come back and make a good amount of money that's equal or even more than the NBA minimum if I'm a mid-second round, then I'll do that. So,
and that's, I know there's, yeah, and I know there's a lot of people who are somewhat down on Bona for the propensity to foul and all that kind of stuff, but absolutely essential. If his coming back is essential, in my opinion, to the team being as good as it can be next year. He would be a third year player. He's suddenly an upperclassman instead of a sophomore who had a lot on his shoulders. He's going to be more used to having a lot on his shoulders. It would be a much better version of the guy you saw this year, who was, whether you think so or not, much improved from last year.
And then Dylan Andrews, I think, is the guy that I know people are arguing he's not a point guard, and he's not a pure point guard. That's true. But there's also, he's operating in a different kind of offense too than what we were seeing a bit under when Tiger Campbell was there. It's more of, if you notice, it feels different. There's the handoff offense. There's the high ball screen handoff. You know, it's so funny because in college basketball, there's trends. And I don't know if all the coaches get together in one big, you know, group text and say, hey, let's do that. Let's do this year.
Yeah.
You know, the ball screen, the pick and roll became a thing, 4 years? And then everyone started doing it. This is where the offense is. It's not made necessarily for a pass first point guard. It would help and enhance it. This offense is done mostly because there aren't a lot of pure point guards left in college basketball. So it's like a kind of help to make up for that. So when your point guard goes out, someone else can also do this. Sebastian Mack or, you know, Will McClendon can step into that same role of initiating the offense. My argument is, I think Dylan Andrews has proven himself completely beyond a doubt that you want him to return. Lazar Stefanovic, I think, is vital to the team, whether he should be a starter or not. And I know there will be people who said he shouldn't. And then, you know, if you probably ask the UCLA coaches, they'd probably say he's our warrior. I mean, he scored 20 points in the second half last night, which was crazy. When you go scoreless in one half and go, oh, wow, this guy's going to have a bad game, and then he scores 20 points in the second half, I mean, that guy is a warrior. He's the one who communicates. He's the coach on the court. I think you do what you can to keep Sebastian Mack. I think he has tremendous upside. He's a freshman. He's been this productive. Yeah, he has some issues. I've said Adaimara is returning. I think Adaimara he's shown this year that he's got a lot of upside. I'd love to see him with the off season at UCLA and then back next year. I know you say it's critical to keep this team together, and undoubtedly there will be some guys left that I haven't mentioned that will return. But when you're, I just named five, you know, from 6 to 10 to 11, it's not that critical who returns. Brandon Williams, you'd love to see him as a sophomore. I think Bearke has a lot of upside. He hasn't been playing well. I had reported before that what we were hearing is that he intended to return next season. I mean, Will McClendon, we've talked about this. If he's your eighth, ninth, 10th guy, fine. But there isn't much, there isn't much upside after that. I think we've seen his ceiling. Maybe it could be pushed up a little bit more, but there isn't much left. You know, it's funny. Jan Vide might have had his best few moments of the season last game, even though that was all in garbage time. He kind of showed what he could do, at least offensively. But Yeah. I mean, I think, like I said, they're going to go into the transfer portal looking for specifically two guys. And those two guys who are experienced veterans, who are dogs, who play their ass off. And that could be a wing, a guard, or a power forward. Any one of those guys. So
yeah. So there's two different things going on here, because for next year, you're right. The top five guys are the only ones who are kind of essential to the building blocks of next year. But to sustainability in the long term, Devin Williams and Brandon Williams both 100% absolutely positively need to be retained, because they're two guys who have bought into the program, who have the right mindset. Like, they should be priorities to retain if the goal is to maintain a sustainable program. Those are the guys that they are the building blocks of a Mick Cronin program that is working properly.
Okay. Now, while you're saying this, though, we have to keep in mind the way it works and what determines that. And it's all NIL.
Correct. No, but what I'm saying is, pay them some money, because otherwise all you're doing is kicking the can down the road a year.
I get it, Dave, but you're saying that in a vacuum. Give them some money. If that money that you need to keep a Dembona, I mean, what do you, if it's money between Brandon Williams for him to return, because he wants more, or the money, the difference it makes, and that's critical to keeping a Dembona. I mean, these are the decisions you have to make. It's the fans and people are saying, well, pay him and keep him. It's not the way it works.
if the difference is the, like, if Brandon Williams is sitting there asking for $500,000, then no, obviously you can't keep him. But if the difference that we're talking about is paying him another 50 and that gets lopped off of Bona's, and Bona's deciding he's not staying because of that, well, then there's a bigger problem at play, which is that UCLA doesn't have the flexibility to move 50 grand around. So there's my point is, if the goal is to go out and get two high level transfers who can start and retain a Dembona and retain Dylan Andrews, then there's money to be played with. And if there's such a limited priority of retaining two guys who have already spent a year developing the program, well, those roster spots also need to be filled. And are we filling them with guys who don't get any money? Because then those guys are probably not going to be very good. So there's a lot that needs to go into the thinking here, and it can't be as simple as, oh, we think we can get somebody better than Brandon Williams. Maybe you can, maybe you can't. But most importantly, Brandon Williams has spent a year playing for you. Again, going back to the thesis up top, it's hard to play for Mick Cronin. Years in the program need to be valued. Like, that is a huge
completely
thing when you are doing 100%
the calculations agree. About NIL. I'm just saying that's all true, and I agreed, and I said it too, but there is the reality. You're talking $50,000. Well, okay, that was the scenario you came up with. But let's say, you know, Rick Pitino offers Brandon Williams $500,000 to come back and play in front of his family.
Sure.
I mean, and that, you know, they've got to pay Brandon Williams. UCLA has to pay Brandon Williams, and I'm making up these numbers.
And like I said,
$400,000 more.
And like I said, if it's $500,000, then no, you don't.
Okay,
do that.
What if there's a difference of 100 grand? I mean, then, it's all a balancing act.
Right. And then you have to think about, what are you getting to replace that roster spot? Not the roster spot of a starter, because you're already having to earmark a bunch of money, like we're saying, for two starters. You're also having to earmark a big raise for your starting five, whoever that ends up being.
And just assume all of these guys. And it's just like Will McClendon will come back to them and want more NIL money to come back next year. All mm-hmm. of them. Every single one.
And part of the calculation has to be experience in the program matters for a lot of different reasons, but mainly because it's hard to play for Mick Cronin. And if you're saying, we can go get a guy who's better than Brandon Williams for less money, can you?
Okay, is that's a good way to looking at it. How much, let's say you got two guys or between Brandon Williams, what he will give you next year, and you're projecting it compared to a transfer, and you're devaluing, you're giving Brandon Williams more value because he's been in the program for a year compared to a transfer. But all in all, you know, they're close to what you would project the value they will give you next year on the court. how much is 1 year of experience in Mick Cronin's program worth in NIL?
Yeah. For that roster.
I'm asking you.
Well, I have no idea. I mean, I think it comes down to this idea. Again, this is about knowing yourself and knowing your program. You're, again, back to the precepts about Mick Cronin. He's a developmental coach. If you start dropping guys who are developing in your program, and Brandon Williams, he's developing. He is one of the guys they like. Well, if you start saying, okay, well, he's not worth, let's say it's in the scenario of an extra $100,000, and we're going to take his money that we've got right now and go get somebody just as good. Well, are you getting somebody just as good? First, and second, are you getting somebody who's going to buy in to the level that Brandon Williams has? And this is the part where, as much as you can, the priority has to be retaining. And again, if Rick Pitino offers $500,000, then you can't do that. That's not worth it for what should be your backup four. But if it's not that, and look, Rick Pitino, he may be fast and loose with St. John's money. I have no idea. But it's hard to imagine Brandon Williams making $500,000 next year. If it's not that, then Brandon Williams and Devin Williams should be priorities for a sustainable UCLA program, because they're not nailing it in high school recruiting right now. Eric Freeney is the lone guy coming in. They need building blocks if this is going to be a sustainable thing beyond next year. It cannot all be, we're going to create the best possible team for next year with a bunch of transfers who are between 1 and 2 year guys, and then just hope for the best in the future. Like,
I get what you're saying, but Dave, you have to come to terms with the fact, if you're going to dedicate NIL money to keeping a lot of developmental guys, you're giving away a lot of NIL money that's going to keep the guys we talked about at the top, Adem Bona, Dylan Andrews, Stefanovic, and Sebastian Mack, and Adai Mora.
If the difference, but no, because we're saying different things. Because to go into the transfer portal and acquire two high-level athletes, right, that's going to cost a lot of money, right? Like a lot of money beyond the current budget of the program.
So, yeah, let's just stop right there and just say you want to go out and get two guys.
Right. To be able to $1 million at least.
To be able to afford them. And then Brandon Williams and his people come back and say, we want this bump. And that amount of money will keep you from getting the two other guys.
Mm-hmm. If it's that, but again, be specific. If it's $500,000, no, you don't do that.
But it might be 125. You're going one way big, 500 for the shock value of it compared to 50.
No, there's everything in between. That's the number you said about.
Okay, but there's everything in between. There's like 125,000 that will help you get that transfer, but it will help you retain. I'm just saying there are going to be decisions that have to be made on NIL money of retaining guys like Devin Williams and Brandon Williams. Or going out and getting a transfer that can really help you win.
I get all that, but replacing that roster spot is still going to cost money. Replacing the Brandon Williams roster spot if he leaves, or Devin Williams roster spot if he leaves, is still going to cost money.
Right. So what you do is, and this is how they do it, is for you project that slot for next season. Brandon Williams realistically should be what?
The backup four.
The backup four, so he's the number eight guy on the team, seven or eight. That money is worth $125,000 a year. He comes in and says, I've been offered $325,000. You negotiate, you get him down to $275,000, but that's the slot. And if you give that to him, now you're going into the transfer portal. You don't have a number for the guys you're just in the transfer portal. You haven't hit a number yet. Right. If you commit to Brandon Williams, you know you're taking money away from, you're projecting the slot of the transfer and how much that's going to cost you. You know you're taking money away from that. So there are tough decisions to be made of whether how much he's worth and how much more he's going to want. Not just Brandon Williams, poor guy, we keep using him, but given who he is on this team and how much money he should be making next year. So there are tough decisions to be made. And all I'm saying, just saying the blanket statement that you got to do what you can do to retain guys like Brandon Williams and Devin Williams. It's just not that easy. That's
who
true.
Said it was easy. Who are you arguing with? I'm not saying it's easy.
No.
It
you
is,
just,
it is a, it
Dave,
is
you
a
said go out and retain them, Dave.
It is a calculation. What I am saying, what I am saying is that that should be a priority. I am saying that should be a focus. I am arguing that it should be a focus. I'm not saying it is going to be easy. I am saying it should be a focus. If you are building a sustainable program, you need to build it off of building blocks that you recruit from high school. It's very simple.
I think what we're doing is capturing the dilemma of what it is, of what it's going to be like, as all coaches in college right now. I think they want to do what we're saying, and especially McCronin as a developmental coach, is to bring in developmental guys that he knows, like what I'm saying, the dilemma of keeping them and whether he can afford to keep them and go out and get the transfers that he thinks he needs to win next year.
Yeah, and this is, again, my thesis. Winning next year cannot come at the expense of building a sustainable program. If the choice is bring in two transfers and retain a Dembona, but you're losing the entire back half of your roster and you have to replace all of those guys, all you're doing is kicking the can down the road. You're kicking the can down the road a year, because the guys who you would have to get to immediately improve the upside for next year are more than likely going to be one and done and on to the NBA after that, or one and done and graduated. So gotta know who you are. Going back to the beginning of this podcast, you have to know what kind of coach you are. You have to know what kind of program you're building. Don't make the same mistakes you've made before and instead make new and better decisions.
I'm just saying, in the real world with NIL and transfer portal,
you keep saying in the real world.
This is not the real world thing.
I'm saying.
I think it is.
There's very potential that
the
they
way
may
you're saying up. It sounds. It's like this idealistic of what you should do. It's just more difficult.
No, given it's in the NIL. Condescending to say that. No, okay. It is not. It is a real world situation where you have to be cognizant of the person you are. I don't think they will be. I think they will go and prioritize transfers. And I think, you know, several of these guys who potential building blocks would be jettisoned, but they need to actually have this conversation. It's an important conversation because what kind of program are you trying to build?
Okay.
So there you go.
I know you got to get the last word. I get it. And you did. So let's move on.
It's not a last word thing. You keep misrepresenting what I'm saying. I think I pretty much represented exactly
what you said, but let's move on.
All right. On to football. Football has created an entirely new staff, Tracy. So offensive coordinator, Eric Bieniemy. And now in the last week, they have hired none of it officially announced. They've hired a new offensive line coach, Juan Castillo, a new quarterbacks coach, Ted White, and a new wide receivers coach, Kirk Frazier. Is that right?
I think so.
These are three pretty significant changes. So Tim Drevno out at offensive line. Billy Fessler, who was hired at the beginning of January, out at quarterback. And Jerry Neuheisel, who's been the wide receivers coach since the 2021 season, has not yet been reassigned, at least as far as we know, but we're anticipating that he will be the new tight ends coach. A lot of guys who haven't done a whole lot of college recruiting lately.
I mean, from their actual coaching, who knows? Bieniemy, you have to feel... You know, he's got a good pedigree when it comes to being an offensive coordinator and a scheme. You'd have to feel pretty confident, at least about the scheme that he'll put in. We know about some of the guys. We know about Akaika Maloy, but he's moving into a new role, which is defensive coordinator. We know Cody Whitfield a bit because he's been there for a year. We do know Brian Norwood. So there is some known quantities. But there's a lot of unknown quantity when it comes to just pure coaching among these guys. Like, how good of coaches are there? How well they can optimize the talent that they have? And then the bigger challenge, like you said, is how good of recruiters can they be? and recruiting is going to be huge here. A lot of the reasons why, you can cite a lot of the reasons why Chip Kelly didn't succeed at UCLA. His engagement with fans, blah, 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 blah. If he had really just hired a kick-ass recruiting staff and he just said, you know what, I'm going to let you guys go to work, but you better work your ass off and bring me some talent, he'd probably still be here. I mean, he just decided to neglect recruiting. No matter how good of coaching you are, you need to recruit. You need to get the talent. And this is a big question mark. I mean, we could go coach by coach here, but there isn't a lot. There is not only a lack of college recruiting on all these resumes, but a lack of recent college recruiting. I mean, Jerry Neuheisel might be the ace recruiter on this staff. And that's not saying anything bad about Jerry. Jerry's generally a pretty good recruiter. But there aren't too many guys who are you know, have recent success in college football recruiting.
Yeah. And a lot of what they've had at the college level is FCS level, which is a different deal. So it's going to be interesting to see how this works. I mean, I think the jury is still completely out. I mean, there's nothing that says they all can't suddenly be very good recruiters. But there isn't, you know, when Jim Mora was putting together his staff and they hired Adrian Clem, Demetrius Martin, Eric Yarber, even all of those guys had major reps as heavy duty college recruiters. These guys don't. And that's not to say they won't be good. It's just, again, it's adding another kind of unknown factor onto the larger unknown, which is how is Deshaun Foster going to perform as a head coach? And, you know, there's a lot of every time they add a hire, it's not something that I can sit around and excoriate because I don't know. But it's also not anything that you can say, yeah, that's going to work. That's 100% going to work. It's just kind of cascading unknowns, and we're going to see, and as we've been saying, we're going to see over the next several months whether this is working, you know, whether we start seeing reports of guys, you know, coming on visits and enjoying the experience, and whether, you know, you're reading on the message board, you know, Biggins, Huffman, or us saying, hey, UCLA is recruiting this guy hardest. That's the stuff that's going to be proof in the pudding. But when you're talking about the priorities for this 12 to 18 months, you know, we've been hammering the drum for a long time. It's NIL and it's recruiting. This staff is an unknown. It's just an unknown from that perspective. And we're going to have to kind of see it in real time to see whether they can get over the hump.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, we don't want you to take away from this that we're being negative about their potential to recruit. We're just going on any of the information and precedent that we have given this staff that's being built. We are hoping, like anyone else, that over the next few months, you know, we're getting reports from Huffman and Biggins that the UCLA staff is really getting after it. Same thing we did with Chip Kelly. I mean, we gave that at least that first cycle when he was in there. And I mean, I'll go back and readily admit, you know, I was trying to buy into that theory of going after the three or four, the lower four-star and three-star and developing them and the all business, you know, not necessarily bringing them in for 2 days of an official visit. If you remember, Chip Kelly wanted
bring him in for a night at Luskin. Don't take him off campus. Don't take him to a dinner.
Wanted to limit their official visits to 1 day. that says it all right there.
Efficiency, baby, efficiency.
But I think it's, you did an interview with Andy Myers yesterday, putting him as making him president of the football NIL for Men of Westwood. I think is a really good move because this is going to be a lot about NIL. Also, it's going to be about their effort and NIL, and a lot of this. I mean, in my experience of watching staffs and how they recruit, a lot of it is the tone that the head coach sets. I've seen, there are, I think we've talked about this, there are coaches that are just naturally good recruiters, and that's a small percentage. Most of them don't like to recruit because it's outside of their skill set. I mean, they just want to coach. We've heard that before. To get, and then within that little subset of guys who don't necessarily want to coach, there are good recruiters, but they need to be motivated and they need to be led by the head coach that, you know, and held accountable that you got to get out there and recruit. And those guys can be good recruiters, and they're a whole nother subset that no matter what, they're just not good recruiters. But so much of it will hinge on. Okay. Let's go with him. So much will hinge on, the tone that Deshaun Foster sets in recruiting.
Yeah. And that, will have to be very different from what Chip Kelly did. I mean, it's just, that's the full stop. If there's one big switch from the Chip Kelly era, and we're hoping for many, but if there's one, the top down level of recruiting buy-in has to be very different. There has to be a different standard set for the assistant coaches, because there were a lot of, previously decent, I'm not going to name names, but previously decent assistant coach recruiters who became non-recruiters at UCLA under Chip Kelly. And that's going to have to change.
Yeah. If they can, if the head coach is going to allow them to slack off, you know, most human beings do.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, right. Dave.
Well, there we
go. That was good. We got in a little bit of a disagreement. I know everyone out there is going, I hate it when mom and dad, when the parents fight.
Look, we're all...
we're okay. We love each other.
We love each other.
Go back to your room and shut up.
Shut up. Mommy and daddy need to talk angrily to each other again now. All right. Well, for Tracy Pearson, I'm David Woods. Am I mom or are you dad? My mom? Are you mom?
Let's just say we're co-parents.
We're co-parents. We're co-parenting you, the bro family. We'll talk to you again next time. Have an excellent weekend, and maybe UCLA will actually win a game tomorrow night. Who knows?
We'll see y'all.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.